From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, we continue our series of conversations with candidates running for office. And this hour, we talk with the candidates in the 135th Assembly District for New York State. Republican incumbent Mark Johns was first elected to represent the district 10 years ago. His opponent is a Democrat, Jen Lunsford, who is an attorney with Seeger and Sciortino, and she came close to winning a New York State Senate seat in the last election. Now she's running for Assembly. So here are two candidates who are probably better known among most voters in their district than in many of the races locally. This hour, it's a chance to bring them together, talking about their priorities for the district, for New York State, how they see the issues affecting this community and the voters who will have to decide between them. Let's welcome them now. Our guests include Mark Johns, a Republican candidate in the 135th District. Mark, welcome to the program.
Evan, thanks for having me. And Jen, saying hello, Jen.
Hi, Jen. You can say hello to Mark. That's very nice.
Hi, Mark. Yeah, it's very awkward doing this on the phone. Normally, we would have had the time to greet each other beforehand.
I know, but we're doing our best in these circumstances. Jen, of course, is the Democrat running in the 135th Assembly District. And we're going to have a chance to talk to both of the candidates about their platforms, their views on a range of issues. I'll ask both of you to start out by telling us what is motivating you to serve in this district. And Mark, you've been there for a decade, so let's talk about what motivates you. What is the top priority for you in serving?
Well, obviously, I think I might be the hardest working member of the Assembly or the Senate. Evan, you know that, and I think the people of the East Side know that. I've gotten tens of thousands of people their unemployment checks and other benefits. I mean, I worked extra overtime this time around. But I think what got me into this is I really am an independent thinker. And I want people to know what's wrong, why it's wrong, and how to fix it. And what you have in New York State right now, and it's continuously been like that before I got elected, is pay to play. It's the big money. It's the big lobbyists. It's the loudest voice in the room happens to be the biggest campaign contributors. And, I'm fighting back against that. We'll talk about some of the reforms I have, but anybody that wants to know anything about my campaign, just go to votemarkjohns.com. If you got a minute now, just look at the first video. It's 1 minute. And I think that if that doesn't convince you, maybe nothing will. And if you're already made up your mind, I guess you can put on the music station. But during this hour, I hope to just bring out some of the points that I brought out for the last 10 years.
Okay. Jen, same question. What motivates this run for you?
So I began running for office in 2018 in large part because my son was 8 weeks old on Election Day. And when I knew that he was not going to grow up in the kind of world I was expecting for him, I knew that it was my responsibility to make that world, not just for him, but for all of our families, a world where he could grow up with hope and opportunity and equality and justice for everyone. So I have been working nonstop since he was born to make sure that he has the kind of community here that I want for him and that I want for everyone's children. This particular year is, I think, even more compelling because we are in a crisis the likes of which we have never seen. This is an all-hands-on-deck situation. We have a healthcare pandemic, we have a financial crisis, and we need strong leaders at the bargaining table in Albany to make sure that this district and that the people of Monroe County get everything they deserve. You know, all due respect to Mark, he's been there for 10 years, and I have not seen leadership from him. We need someone who can make sure that when the funding cuts come for healthcare, for our schools, for our infrastructure projects, that we have people fighting to make sure that funding stays here. And for better or worse, the way Albany works, if you're not at the bargaining table, you're at the kiddie table.
Okay. So let's talk
about... Well, Evan, let me just bring something
go
up.
Go ahead.
Jen is not going to be at the bargaining table any more than any of the other Democrats are at the bargaining table. If Jen has been following this stuff, she knows the old saying, three men in a room. Now it's three people in a room. And whatever they bring out, usually the budget, but anything else has been decided on, the votes, it goes to the floor for a vote. And every bill the Democrat majority brings up in the Assembly passes. Every bill. And, if you call that democracy, I mean, Jen thinks that's okay. But the reality is every single bill that comes up, and we do maybe 1,000 bills a year, where can you go that you can flip a coin 1,000 times that always comes up heads? And the deals are cut in advance. It's pay to play. I've seen all kinds of bills, we can go into detail, where they languish for year after year. All of a sudden, the big money comes in, the lobbying money comes in, the money to the parties comes in, and voila, the bill comes up. And every time a bill comes up on the assembly floor, it passes. They haven't had a bill be voted down in Jen's lifetime. Call that democracy?
All right, Jen, go ahead.
I would love to respond to that. Three men in a room refers to the people who actually negotiate the final parts of the budget, but all of the legislators have an enormous stake in what goes into that agreement beforehand. We work very hard, Harry Bronson, hopefully now Sarah Clark and Damon Meeks, and me and our two new Democratic Senate candidates as well, hopefully, will have a say in what goes on in that room because we get to be at the bargaining table beforehand. The reason that bills pass on the floor is because bills don't get to the floor if they don't have the votes. It sounds very conspiratorial the way Assemblyman Johns is speaking about it, because that's his goal. He's trying to make it seem like it's rigged. But the reality is that's how government works. Why would we waste time on the floor when we only have 6 months of voting to make sure that we are having robust debates beforehand in committee? You know, one of Assemblyman Johns' key pieces of legislation is a bill that would let him put a bill on the floor that hasn't passed a committee vote because he can't get a bill out of committee. That's not good government either. If it's a bad bill, it won't get out of committee. It's about legislative efficiency, why bills pass on the floor. And I'm telling you, the minority members of the party don't have a say. They can ask. But if you look at the bills that Assemblyman Johns has passed in the last 10 years. There's only 5 of them. One was vetoed, and the other 4 are land use bills in Webster. None of them have money attached to them. He's just been ineffective. You know, again, all due respect to him, but that's not leadership.
Well, all right, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, look, I mean, Jen wants to be a part of the go-along to get-along crowd. I understand that. She's backed by the big money from New York City and Long Island. They'll do what they're told to do. When there are tough bills that come up, Tier 6, look at that one. A lot of people don't know, but I'm sure the government employees understand. That was brought up. The Democrats, remember, this was 2012, March 15th, Ides of March. That bill was brought up after the Democrats swore that they would never vote for Tier 6. Well, it came up as a package of 10 bills the governor wanted passed. And when that bill passed, a Tier 6 bill passed, it's pension reform, not really reform, but that's what it was billed as, it came up at 5 o'clock in the morning. They held the vote open 2.5 hours while they whipped the count and got the votes up to at least 76, which you need to pass. And the premise behind that was they also had passed their new gerrymandered districts. And the gerrymandered districts, to get the assembly incumbent majority reelected, was more important than the workers in New York State, the county, and any other level. And believe me, I know what I'm talking about because I worked for Monroe County Health Department for 30-plus years in environmental health, disease control, housing, sanitation. I know the background of government. I mean, I know it more than just 10 years that I've been in the assembly.
All right. I got to let Jen just have a little fair, equal time, and then we got to move to other issues. Go ahead, Jen.
So, you know, Assemblyman Johns loves to talk about Tier 6, which was it added a new lower level of state pension because he says, you know, I voted against Tier 6. I'm a man of the worker. But he voted against Tier 6 because he wanted to cap everyone's pensions. He thought it was a better idea to cap all public employee pensions. That's not
true.
What someone does for the working class. Mark,
not
I've got
true.
The video. I have you saying it on the floor. You wanted
right.
to cap everyone's pensions.
But, Jen, I mean, let's clarify this. I don't think, apparently you do, because are you taking a no pension pledge? Are you taking that pledge now?
What do you mean by a no pension pledge?
Well, if you get elected to government, are you promising to never sign up for a pension of any of your multi-million dollar pensions? Are you taking that pledge now?
No, I'm not even sure what you're asking me.
You're aspiring to be a career politician, and you understand
you're a career politician. You've been in office for 10 years. You talk about career politicians like you're not one of them.
Okay, 10 years. And guess what? I got a bill for 12-year term limits. I
you
actually
got a bill for 8-year term limits when you first ran, and now you're in your 10th year.
Actually, I would vote for 8-year or 10-year. I would be glad to vote for either one. They don't bring them up. And when you tell me that
then why are you still in office? If you think someone should only be in office for 8 years, why are you running for
that.
A 12th term?
I didn't say that. It's not a 12th term. It's a 12th year.
You're right. A 12th year term. I
right. But my point is, I have a bill for 12-year term limits, and I would be glad, as you said, to vote for a 10-year or an 8-year term limit. And by the way, you're against term limits. I understand that. You want to be a career politician. But you've seen career politicians leaving Albany with multi-million-dollar pensions. Why should anybody? You don't want to put a cap on pensions, but you think the average Monroe County worker, school worker, teacher, whatever, gets over $100,000 a year in a pension? Most people don't make $100,000 a year. Yeah, you're making $250,000 a year as a trial attorney, but I can tell you that most people aren't making that kind of money. And they certainly don't leave with multi-million-dollar pensions like the career politicians do, which we will pay for the rest of their lives.
Okay. I think let's move the conversation in a different direction here. Let's do this. Right now, there are debates among state officials and those who are running for state office about what New York State's responsibility may be in regards to policing, in regards to mental health services, and in regards to calls for change. You have last night a resumption of nightly protests and demonstrations, not only now protesting the death of Daniel Prude, but also protesting the judgment of a grand jury and to charge or not charge officers in Breonna Taylor's death in Kentucky. So here we are, and other candidates in state Senate races have told us on this program that there's a role. Mark Johns, is there a role for state elected leaders to either get involved with funding for changing how policing works? I mean, how do you see this, and do you support the protest movement?
Of course, I believe Black Lives Matter, period. So I'm for peaceful protests. The outside agitators and the violence, I'm not for that at all. I don't want to defund the police as my opponent does, but I do think we need more money for mental health counseling, and I do think the state should give money to all the police forces, all the agencies, to have mental health people on staff at a 24/7. You know, when I worked for the health department, there was a FACET team, and I think it's still in the city, Family and Crisis Intervention Team, and we went out with them and a lot of housing complaints, and there are people out there that have legitimate mental issues, and not all the police officers are going to be equipped to take care of that. So certainly having a mental health professional able to go out with these police forces would be a plus, and it should be funded.
Okay, and Mark, briefly, can I ask you, do you think people of color are treated differently by police in this country?
Well, of course, people of color. They look different, and they're treated different because of the way they look. You've seen police officers that have said they are victims of racial profiling, and they're police officers. So, of course, it happens. But the reality is that most police officers are doing their job. In New York State, we have the Sheldon Silver Rule. We voted on that a few years back. But if you commit a felony in the commission of your job, you lose not only your job, you lose your pension. And I don't think that most people really in government service of any type, teacher, you know, working for county, city, state, really want to lose their job or their pension.
Jen Lunsford, how do you see this?
Well, first off, I of course agree that Black Lives Matter and that we need to have robust funding for not just social workers to respond to mental health calls, but also other kinds of community resource officers that are not police to respond to, like, really what the vast majority of police calls are. We need police officers doing police work, not paperwork. And I have never used the word defund once in my life in reference to police officers, but we do need to rethink the way we fund them. We need police officers doing the kind of work that we need a police force for, and mental health calls, you know, responding to crimes that have been committed and are now over to take reports. That's not police work. And I think not only can we protect our community members and protect our officers, but we can also reduce the economic burden on officers by finding ways to reallocate resources to the kinds of personnel that are more qualified to handle those jobs. And I do want to say, it's very convenient. Every election year this happens with Mark, where he says exactly what he thinks the voters want to hear, that he says that he knows that people of color are treated differently by the police, but then he voted against the bill to prevent officers from using racial and ethnic profiling. He voted against a bill that just gathers data. It's Bill A4615. It was voted on earlier this year. He voted against the establishment of the office.
Hold on, Mark. Hold on. I'll give you time, Mark. Go ahead, Jen.
The Office of Special Investigation and the Attorney General's office that's looking into Daniel Prude right now. There was a bill to establish that office he voted against. Further, you know, we have bills that just report, like, data about the arrests of people of color for low-level crimes. He voted against funding that data. That's not leadership. That's lip service. And we need someone who's going to go to Albany and actually do what they say they're going to do and actually live the values that they purport to have.
Go ahead, Mark Jones.
Okay. Well, first of all, Jen, you're an attorney, so you know this. Racial profiling is illegal. Okay? It is at the federal level. It is at the state level, and I know you know that. So secondly, that particular bill you're referring to, which, by the way, never came up in the Senate, the racial profiling bill never came up in the Democrat Senate, okay? So I guess you really want the Democrats to get tossed out of the Senate. That racial profiling bill said that every time a police officer made a stop, they had to take a census of everybody in the car, their nationality, their background, their color, their creed. I mean, you talk about paperwork and a bureaucracy. You know what? Yes, there could be racial profiling, but that will come out just like this investigation of Daniel Prude. All these investigations will wind up coming out with the truth. But filling up a police officer's time with a bunch of paperwork, when, first of all, number one, it's illegal. And number two, I voted for police reform. You don't bother to mention that, do you? And in fact, I think I was the only Republican that voted for police and for police reform and open government. You know, let's make sure that we have the records of all the people that work in government, starting with the police. But those were the open records. It's called 50A. I voted for that, not to keep them secret. I didn't hear you say that I did vote for that.
All right, Jen Lunsford, I'll give you some time there. Go ahead.
Well, we weren't talking about 50A. We were talking about these three bills that were concrete steps to take towards actually gathering data and doing investigations that can stop the things we're seeing. If you're saying that, oh, this particular police tactic is illegal and that's enough, we can look at Daniel Prude, we can look at Breonna Taylor, we can look at all of these cases across the country and see that something being illegal isn't enough, something being procedure isn't enough, something being what the officers are taught is insufficient to keep people of color in our community safe. We need to be doing more. And a lot of that starts with data gathering so we can actually look and see this is where the problem is. I support not just studying these issues and not just saying I support them, but actually taking concrete steps to make them better.
If anybody is arrested, okay, and brought in, all that data will be recorded. But for routine stops, to take a survey of not only the driver but everybody in the car, that is going way overboard. It's time-consuming, and they may just be stopped for a routine, you know, your taillights out, see what you can do. But the point is, racial profiling is illegal, and if somebody is doing that, they're going to be brought up on charges, and they're going to be disciplined.
I'm glad that the assemblyman feels that our system works so well, but those of us down here on the street, actually in the courthouse, can see that that doesn't function that way.
All right, we've got Jen Lunsford, Mark Johns running for New York State Assembly in the 135th Assembly District. And I have a few emails from listeners, which we'll get to in our second half hour. But we want to stick with the candidates' questions for them for now, and you can email the program. It's connections@wxxi.org. I'm going to start with Jen Lunsford on this question. When we look at how New York State has responded to the pandemic, obviously there was an initial epicenter in New York City. Now the rate of infection in New York State is in the top five or the lowest five in terms of rate of spread in the country. But businesses are concerned. The New York State Restaurant Association put out a statement a few days ago saying they're concerned that without aid of some kind, more than 60% of restaurants could face closure if this pandemic goes through the winter. Outdoor seating is probably not going to be a popular option when it snows. And there's a concern about, number one, whether the restrictions on businesses are fair, and number two, if there is a way to help. So Jen Lunsford, how do you see New York State's actions in regards to the business community, and would you make any changes?
I would. I think that this is the number one issue. As much as we may care about the many other things that we normally talk about in an election year, recovering both from a healthcare perspective and economic perspective as it relates to COVID is going to be priority number one going into 2021. We need to provide bailout funds for our businesses, for our small businesses. I have plans. If you go to www.votegenlunsford.com, I have a pretty robust plan there. That doesn't talk just about bailing our businesses out and providing them with no-interest loans and incentivizing rehiring of people they've laid off, but it also talks about how to pay for those because we have a revenue crisis. We've lost over $15 billion this year just in revenue, never mind the debt we've taken on trying to keep everyone safe and fed and clothed and housed during this crisis. So we absolutely have to do more, and we have to vote in this election to make sure that we get a federal government that will support us and send the aid that we need.
Mark Johns.
Okay, Jen. What was the budget deficit when we passed the budget this year? What was it?
Are you quizzing me? Are you trying to avoid the answer?
No. I'm just telling you, you should know this. You're running for office. What was the budget deficit?
It's not a matter of what the budget deficit
okay,
is.
Well, all right.
How
you
we
know,
dig
I'll
out
tell
of
you,
this
listen,
crisis
I'll
right
tell you
now.
What it is.
We have people who are out of work, people who can't
I
afford to put food
that.
On the table, people who have lost jobs and have nowhere to go. And I'm talking about how we need to fund that moving forward, because when I talk to voters, what I hear is fear. What I hear is uncertainty. And I'm here to tell you that this isn't about what our fiscal conservatives need to do to make sure that, you know, New York stays in the black. It's about helping people today. It's about
right.
making sure that
well,
people
look
can
at
feed
I,
their kids
yeah,
today.
I understand.
All right, let's let Mark go ahead, Mark.
It sounded like a filibuster there, but yes, the budget was $6 billion short, and that was discerned by Thomas DiNapoli, a Democrat who's the head of the pension system. He's the state.
And that was a Medicaid budget hole that the governor filled in using federal CARES money.
$6 billion, and I believe the Fed should bail us out, okay? They should bail all the states out because of this corona problem. But they're not going to bail us out for the $6 billion that we already were caused of our own volition. This state was $6 billion short going into a budget season where the economy was good, unemployment 4%, stock market record high, and we get about 20% of our revenue from the stock market. So we're very dependent on certain things, and when things go south, we have a real problem. Now our budget deficit's looking like 12, 13, maybe 14 billion, and I do believe that they should be bailing us out, and I think obviously these negotiations are going on, but ultimately there's going to be some bailout for all the states, including New York. But when you get back to the SOLE Act, and Evan, you know what that is, single opportunity to legislate equally. Jen says it's not important. Legislative equality doesn't mean anything to her. But the reality is she's agreeing with the U.S. Senate's Republicans. Mitch McConnell doesn't think it's important either. But if we had a SOLE Act at the national level, let every member bring up one bill, I bet you Chuck Schumer would bring up that bailout bill that Mitch McConnell is sitting on. And then that bailout bill could be voted on, and New York State and a lot of other states would benefit by it. So the idea that the career politicians and the big money and the lobbyists all know better than the average person, come on.
Jen, you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
I mean, federal money alone isn't going to be enough to do this. We need to generate revenue here. We need to do more here, and that's why I support passing an ultra-millionaire's tax that will raise, you know, billions of dollars in revenue. I have a number of revenue-generating policies. If you visit my website, you can see that, because we need to take responsibility here to find pockets of money where we can that do not burden the property-owning middle class here, as we have been in the past. I'm a homeowner here in the east side of the county. I'm sure, you know, Mark is as well. We understand what that burden is, and it's so important that we finally make New York City millionaires pay their fair share, because we have an emergency here. We have to figure out a way not just to stay solvent, but to keep people solvent. This isn't just about our state's financial health. It's about our families' financial health. It's about making sure that our families can afford to stay in their homes.
Can I ask you about that, and then we'll have Mark respond on this one, because this has been a big debate even in the Democratic Party, this is not a monolith. I mean, Governor Cuomo has resisted a billionaire's tax or an ultra-millionaire's tax, whereas many others in the party have called for that. Right now, New York State is not going in that direction. And when you talk about billionaires paying more, when you talk about an ultra-millionaire's tax, there's two things if you could address, Jen. First of all, specifically how much, and what do you say to those who will inevitably say, if you pass this, you will chase those billionaires and millionaires to another state?
I am popping on my website right now to get you some specific numbers. So not only do I support an ultra-millionaire's tax, which is projected to raise $2.2 billion per year, but also the pied-à-terre tax that failed at the end of last year, which is projected to raise $650 million. A pied-à-terre tax is a tax on luxury homes worth more than $5 million, which aren't a person's primary residence. That's second homes. That wouldn't affect one single homeowner in Monroe County here. We have a number of revenue-generating policies here, and I do not think that these taxes will drive these millionaires out of New York City, because this is where there's a cachet to living in New York City. You know, I also support a stock buyback transfer, and that was a tax on stock buyback transfers. That is a tax on brokers, and that was something that was passed during FDR's time, and people at that time said, oh, it's going to drive Wall Street out of New York. Not only did it not drive Wall Street out of New York, Wall Street has only boomed since then, and Wall Street is now physically, fiber-optically wired into actual Wall Street. The idea that they would have to move would cost them billions and billions of dollars in infrastructure. We're not going to lose them, and we're not going to lose the bankers that support them either.
And what's the actual number here? I mean, 2 cents, 1 cent, 5 cents. What's the tax
for the
for
the
billionaires, for example?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure which the ultra-millionaire's tax.
Go ahead as specifically as you can. What is the actual tax either for ultra-millionaires or billionaires?
So there is a the billionaire tax is a 2% overall wealth tax. So it's a tax on assets, not on income.
Okay.
That's what, as it pertains to billionaires. When you deal with the ultra-millionaire tax, there's actually a couple different bills out there that use different criteria for determining what exactly the percentage should be, and I'm open to other discussions about how that would work, but the general projection is $2.2 billion in revenue. When you talk about ultra-millionaires, you know, we only have like 113 billionaires in all of New York State. It's not that many people, but we do have a fair amount of people in New York City who qualify for that ultra-millionaire tax, and it's really not that much of a burden on them.
Mark Johns, do you support those ideas?
Well, I told the teachers and other government unions that I would support a temporary tax increase on the rich, temporary. Then I read the bill, found out that it's permanent. And the reason why we don't want to do it at the state level is this: what the governor says. The governor is saying that Jen is wrong, and I agree with the governor. We can raise taxes on the rich at the federal level, and that's where it should be done. And by the way, Trump ran on that 4 years ago. Bernie Sanders ran on that 4 years ago. So if you want to tax people that make $1 million a year or more, fine, but do it at the federal level. Otherwise, people in New York are just going to go across the border, go to Florida, go to somewhere else. And the reality is we don't need to have a physical Wall Street anymore. Trades are conducted over the Internet. Servers can be anywhere. I mean, there's no need to have to stay in New York. Yeah, I know that Jen says it's a source of pride to say you live in New York City, and it may be for a lot of people, but the reality is the people that can move are the ones that are moving, and as the governor said, half of all these billionaires that used to be here are already gone. And to make it a permanent tax, you're just going to drive more people out of the state. But if you wanted to make it a temporary 1 or 2 year till we get through this crisis, that would be something that I could support. But long-term, taxing people, I've got bills that'll save this state $200 million a year. And you know this, Evan. I've talked about it over the years, but Jen doesn't think they should come up for a vote. A unicameral legislature, 75 members total, no party affiliation, just represent your area, represent your district. Yeah, some career politicians would have to lose their jobs, but the fact is 75 members representing their area, nonpartisan elections, guess what? Right there, you save $165 million a year. $165 million. 2-year budget cycles. Let the schools, nonprofits, know what's coming 2 years in advance. They can plan their budget cycles much better. And we'll save, with 2-year budget cycles, we'll save tens of millions of dollars more. Because in the second year of our term, we won't have to be down in Albany more than maybe 2 or 3 months.
All right. So we're talking about ways for New York State on its own to be in a better fiscal position, not just relying on bailout funds from the federal government that may or may not come with the candidates. Let's talk about how the pandemic has impacted health with Mark Johns and Jen Lunsford, the candidates for the 135th Assembly District. Mark, when it comes to health care, we've heard pediatricians say that New York State ought to and is justified in denying school access for students who don't have a flu vaccine, and probably should be in a position, once there is a verified and safe coronavirus vaccine, to do the same. Do you support that, mandating vaccines for students in schools?
Well, it depends on what type of vaccine you're talking about, because right now there are some mandates, but the flu vaccine, Evan, you've seen this in all the surveys and all the polls, 30% of the people are saying they're not even going to take the vaccine. Now, maybe Trump will be first in line to take it, but the reality
is... You mean the coronavirus vaccine?
Yeah, the coronavirus vaccine. I mean, they want to... There's a bill down there to mandate HPV vaccine for kids. They're not even old enough to have sex, but they're going to vaccinate them with something that maybe the parents don't want to go along with. And you're vaccinating kids. Now, I think it might be a good idea, but we're pro-choice. I don't know why we're forcing people to have vaccinations for sexually transmitted diseases when they're 9, 10, 11 years old. I mean, let's at least allow people to be older, understand what's going on, and give them a choice.
Okay, so that's on HPV. Do you support a mandatory flu vaccine for students?
Well, we do have mandatory flu vaccines. I'm not a big supporter of it because the flu is really not something that we're really going to lose a lot of, especially young people, over. And the COVID vaccine, which I think is what really people are worried about, it looks like this rush to get a vaccine is not playing very well with the public, left or right. And
okay.
I definitely don't want to see that type of mandate.
Okay. Let's
to be honest with you, as I said, I worked in public health for 30-plus years, and we need, as Dr. Mendoza said, safe and effective. And I don't want to force those types of vaccines have not been proven safe and effective on young people going to school.
Jen Lunsford.
So I don't think that we should look at this as a issue of partisan politics or whether the public supports something or not. I think we should trust the medical community. And if the medical community is saying that a vaccine is safe and effective, which I think, you know, we're not going to see, even if a vaccine becomes available next month, I don't know that we're going to see everyone saying, yes, this is safe and effective, that we can continue to send kids to school masked and continue to use the safety protocols that we have in place while we roll out the vaccine over time. You know, I know people are very eager to get back to school and get back to work, but I don't necessarily think that we should be experimenting on our kids and on our teachers. So to the extent that we can roll it out slowly, and then once we do have a proven safe and effective vaccine for COVID-19, I would be supportive of mandating it to return to school unmasked.
Okay. What about HPV and flu?
So to the extent, again, that, you know, we have our flu rules, I support them. HPV, I don't know that I support keeping kids out of school. I do think the HPV vaccine is a great vaccine. It's a vaccine that prevents cancer. You know, you talk about giving HPV vaccines to younger kids, to kids starting at 11 years old. And the reason you do that is because you want to get the vaccine in their system before they become sexually active. You don't want a kid becoming sexually active and then saying, oh, yeah, by the way, I should get the HPV vaccine. But because they're unlikely, I think, to pick up HPV in the lunchroom, I don't know that we need to mandate it for school. But I do highly recommend that parents give their kids the HPV vaccine.
Let me get some phone calls. Rick
and Evan, one more thing.
Okay, Mark, go ahead.
Obviously, look, as I said, I worked in public health, and I am pro-vaccine, as you know that. We had that little debate, Harry Bronson and I, and you remember that show, and Harry voted, you know, for the vaccines, a lot of people were upset with him regarding that. But voted against vaccinations. People were upset with him.
He voted for religious exemptions to stay.
Right, but the thing is, we had medical exemptions, and the problem right now is a lot of families have kids that are medically fragile, and giving them vaccines and mandating that could be a death sentence or a life-altering sentence to kids that are already medically fracturous already, and they're going to possibly have a problem. And I think that the physician, the pediatrician, and the family understand the background that the kids are going through. And there's some kids, for medical reasons, that shouldn't be forced to have vaccinations.
Okay.
And the medical exemption is still in effect, okay? But they're not honoring it, and that's where the problem is.
Okay. Anything to add there, John Lunsford, before I grab a call?
No, we can move on.
Okay, let's do that. Let's get Rick in Pittsford first on the phone. Go ahead, Rick.
Hi. Thanks for having me. So I recently got my citizenship, and I'm excited to vote this time. And the top topic for me is the economy. And most of the research I've done shows that New York State ranks among the lowest in the business environment. We are, like, I think, ranked 49th or so in terms of the business environment, and we are ranked 48 in taxes. And I wanted to ask the candidates, what are their plans to improve the business environment in the state, and make it so that people don't leave the state, and we become a more prosperous state. New York City has the 10th largest GDP, and we have a very strong industrial base. Like in the past, New York was very industrially very strong, and I don't know why we are ranked so low. And what specific plans do they have to improve the economy of the state?
Okay, thank you, Rick. Let's get Mark Johnson on that first. What special plans do you have to improve the economy of New York State?
Well, we should start reopening up the economy with safeguards. I'm a big proponent of wearing a mask, social distancing. I go door to door. I put the card on the door. I step back at least 6 feet. I'm wearing a mask. And people like when you come out and talk to them. I return calls. I go door to door. You can do it in a safe way. And I'm for reopening the economy in a safe way. And
What does that mean?
Well, obviously wearing masks, the president has fallen down on this. I'll be honest with you. Trump has botched this thing. I talked to a woman, a Democrat. She's voting for me, but she goes Trump. And now she can't stand Trump and will never vote for him. But the fact is she goes Trump blew it, and he did. He didn't take it seriously. And you have to take these things seriously, but taking it seriously doesn't mean we're all going to hide in our houses forever. So we can do a lot of things and use a lot of precautions to get the economy going without making everybody quarantine at home and making everybody scared to do anything.
Jen Lunsford, go ahead.
So in order to jumpstart our economy from now and to create a robust and growing economy into the future, I think we need to take a WPA-style plan. We need to use our infrastructure dollars, our economic development dollars, our environmental bonds that unfortunately didn't pass this year, but I hope will pass in the future. We need to combine those into a big pot of money that we use to put people back to work in our local economy, doing the kind of work that will help us grow, fixing our roads and bridges, making sure that our infrastructure is hardened against the ravages of climate change, and to invest in businesses that are supporting those efforts moving forward. We need to expand rail. We need to expand our zero-emission transportation vehicles to make sure that people can get to where the jobs are. Small businesses are the backbone of our economy, and making sure that they are supported. And I'm talking about real small businesses, not 500-employee companies like the SBA defines them as. Real small businesses businesses here, like the ones I work for, the ones my husband works for, the ones my parents worked for, that employ people in our neighborhoods. When we spend our economic development dollars, too often those dollars go to Albany political cronies. We need to invest in homegrown businesses from people who live here, who employ our neighbors, because they're the ones who have something invested in growing our community. By supporting them and finding tax incentives and loan programs that support them, we can grow our economy here.
Talking to Jen Lunsford and Mark Johns, let me get Robert in Fairport next. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for thanks for taking my call. I just cut a check for almost $5,000 from my school taxes, and New York State spends over $24,000 a year per student on education. That's double the national average, which is $12,612 in 2020. I'm just curious what the candidates are going to do to try to arrest this growth in spending. One area I'm particularly interested in hearing about is the possibility of introducing legislation that would block local school boards from having ex-teachers serve on the school board. I think it's a conflict of interest if you have an ex-teacher or an ex-administrator there in a position to influence the spending on benefits for the school. We actually have that in Fairport. We have an ex-principal on the school board. And I'd like to hear if they would favor legislation that would block these people from assuming such a position, which creates a conflict of interest.
Yeah, go ahead, Jen, because I got a comment on something else. So go ahead, Jen.
Sure. So the as it pertains to your immediate question, I wouldn't support that because teachers and administrators are the experts. They're the ones with the professional know-how to tell us what schools need to run. You know, to say that they shouldn't serve on the school board, which is governs how money is distributed, is to say that we need people who lack accountability and lack expertise deciding how to spend money. And I think we see that too often in government. So I wouldn't support that. But, you know, I do want to talk about school funding because I have been a proponent for a long time of fully funding foundation aid. And foundation aid is the state level funding that comes in. In 2007, the formula was created and it was supposed to create this bucket of money that everyone could predict from year to year. But then it was never fully funded. Right now, the Rochester City School District is owed like $1.9 billion in back foundation aid funding. We need to make sure that foundation aid, first and foremost, is fully funded. That prior to COVID, we were talking about creating a mechanism to start to pay the schools back for money they are owed since 2007. And then we also need to reevaluate that formula because it's outdated. That 2007 formula doesn't account for things like the increase in mental health diagnoses, the increase in English as a second language students that are we're seeing particularly post-Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. It doesn't account for the increase in autism diagnoses. You know, the average student with an autism diagnosis costs $1 million more over their lifetime to educate than a typical student. It doesn't account for school hardening. We need to find ways to make sure that schools are receiving the money they need from the promised state fund. And then that can help alleviate some of the burdens on the taxpayers here.
Mark Johns.
Right. Well, what Jen's referring to is the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, and that was way back in about 2005. And then what happened is, 2008, the crisis hit. We had a financial crisis hit. So they did gap elimination. And a lot of people might remember that. Maybe Jen does. But gap elimination just meant they took away from the schools and other areas to fill the gap, to fill the budget gap. And that's what they meant by gap elimination. So I'm for restoring that, absolutely. And the more we give to our school districts, the lower our school property taxes are going to be. But when Jen talks about public works programs and all this other stuff, it takes money to fund these things. It's easy to say we're going to do this, that, and the other thing, well, billions for this and billions for that. It adds up, and we're in a deficit right now. And there's a reason why the NFIB, the small business people, National Federation of Independent Business, and the Chamber of Commerce have all endorsed me. Now, Jen went for those endorsements. She got none of them. I got all of them. It might tell you that I'm a little more business-oriented. And also, the fact that we need to fund these schools, as I said, unicameral legislature will save $165 million a year. We also spend $800 million a year on these economic development zones. Why don't we take a couple years off and use that to help our budget deficit? The Hollywood tax credit, $420 million a year, and billions of dollars going into pork barrel spending to our favorite lobbyists, you know, or the people that are lobbying Albany the most. $200 million a year going to lobby Albany. Do you think the average person has an opportunity? That's why I promote the FDR bill, the Fairness and Democratic Reform Act. If our bills won't come up, and Jen's against legislative equality, so if you're against the SOL Act, how about power to the people? Let the people take our bills and take the most popular bill and put it on the ballot. They let people vote on bond acts. They let people vote on gambling casinos. Let's let people vote on the things they want, like real campaign finance reform, term limits, some other stuff.
Okay.
Power to the people.
Okay. Let me squeeze in a little bit more from listeners. Lisa in Rochester. Got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Lisa.
Okay. Hi. Quick question for both of you. How does legalizing marijuana, how would that help New York State's economy?
Jen Lunsford.
Legalizing marijuana is projected to raise over $300 million a year annually. The states around us have been doing it. We're losing not just direct sales revenue, but also the tourism revenue that comes along with it. I think it's something that we have to examine. You know, we have other states to look to when it comes to safety, and we can help determine, you know, what to do about field testing. We have laws in place now that, you know, protect people who are in enforce laws related to driving under the influence. I definitely think that that's something we should look into. And I do just want to respond very briefly to Mark that there's also a reason that I'm endorsed by the teachers union. So go ahead.
All right, Mark Johns, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering what their reason was because, let's be honest, I've always got the teachers union support. I've been with them. For the teachers out there, I voted against APPR when the Democrat majority rammed it down their throat. I voted against Tier 6 when they said they wouldn't do it. I voted against Merrill Control, which you know is coming to Rochester and Buffalo. And I stood up against Common Core. So, you know what? I've been with the teachers 100%.
But they're not with you anymore.
Well, I understand politics plays a big role in everything. And, you know, I can't compete with the big money you have on your side. But
the big money. I out fundraised you with individual donations under $25, 5-1. I have not received any corporate money. I have only received PAC money from unions. I do not have one corporate dollar in my fundraising account right now.
Did you ask for the Chamber of Commerce endorsement?
I did ask for the Chamber of Commerce endorsement.
Did you ask for NFIB endorsement?
I did not.
Okay. I didn't ask for it either. They gave it to me.
We're a little off track. Let's do this. Briefly here, it sounds like Jen Lunsford, yes to legalizing marijuana. Mark Johns, yes or no to legalizing marijuana?
We first have to have the safeguards in place so we can test to make sure that drivers, and this is the things the unions and the businesses are worried about. You have to be able to test drivers. You have to make sure that people aren't on the job endangering other people. Right now, we have no way of testing. I'm a libertarian. I believe that people should be able to do what they want to do if they're not hurting other people. But how are you going to know that it's going to be safe? With the safeguards, sure. But there are no safeguards now.
Okay. Kate says, Mark, we met at a climate event sponsored by the Rochester People's Climate Coalition a few years back.
Right.
I was surprised to hear you say that you were skeptical of climate change.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. Well, who said that?
This is a listener who says that she thinks that you voted against the historic climate change legislation last year and wants to know if your views on climate have changed.
They haven't changed. I believe in look, there is global warming out there, and it's not something I believe in. It's a fact. My background is I have a bachelor's of science degree in biology and chemistry from St. John Fisher. I'm a science background person, okay? I deal with facts. Global warming is real. Climate change is real. And one of the things that turned me against, there's a lot of things I have a problem with Trump with, but one of the first ones, when he pulled us out of the Paris Climate Accord meetings that they were having for global warming. I understand China was given a free pass in India, but the fact is you don't pull out. You stay in because it's a real problem. and you take a look at just the plastic floating around in the Pacific Ocean. We need to have legislation worldwide because pollution anywhere is going everywhere. And I am absolutely a believer in climate change, and it's a problem.
All right, Jen?
Well, then why did you vote against the Climate and Community Protection Act in 2019? You know, that was a historic bill. It made New York a climate change leader, and it also tied funding to shovel-ready jobs, which would build exactly the kind of green economy I'm talking about here. That's what I mean when I say you say things that people want to hear, but the reality is when rubber meets the road, you're not voting that way. And it's very easy to come back to your district in election years and say you believe in climate change, but when I look at your voting, it's not what I see. I don't see leadership. I don't see someone who's
first of all, there was problems with that bill, but remember, in 28, the previous two-year term, the environmental advocates gave me a 92% rating, higher than any Republican, higher than most Democrats, 92%. And a lot of these bills I believe in. Yes, I voted against two of the bills, but these are bills that should be done at the federal level. It's just like the governor says, you can't do these things. You can't raise taxes at the state level. You can raise taxes on the rich, but you got to do it at the federal level. Well, we don't want to punish New York and make punitive changes to New York, which is only going to send more business out of the state. And I'm for working with business to make sure that, yes, let's start sealing houses and doing the kind of things that will help, solar panels,
all
whatever.
Right. Okay.
But I'm not for doing things at the state level only. The state is less than 1% of the pollution in the world.
All right, Jen, in 10 seconds, it sounds like you would have voted for that bill last year.
Absolutely, I would. And when I look around my district and I look at our landfill problems and I look at the infrastructure that we need to put in to protect us from climate change, I can tell you that climate is very much a local issue. Not only is it not just a state issue, it's an everyone issue. And I do not see the kind of leadership I would expect from someone who says that they believe that climate change is real.
All right, Jen and Mark, can we get your websites so people can learn more? Jen Lunsford online. Where?
At www.votejenlunsford.com.
Mark Johns.
Yeah, I do 60-second videos, so it won't take long, folks. Just go to votemarkjohns.com, listen to that first 60-second video, and just like I do in my office, I put my home phone number out there.
Okay.
So go to votemarkjohns.com, look at the first video. I do four 60-second ones,
right.
And then give me a call.
Mark, Jen, thanks very much.